please rise. Join me in the salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our deputy clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutchler.
Here.
Councilmember Hirsch.
Here.
Okay, and so the two missing council members were both asked for excused absence.
So moved.
Yeah, they've asked.
I'll second it.
Moved and second. Moved by Councilor Ingram, second by Councilor Hansen. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion carries 5-0. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the time for people to come forward and speak on anything that's not on tonight's agenda, anything that's not on tonight's agenda. Things on the agenda, and Ferndale, we do a little differently, that if you raise your hand, we'll let you talk on any time during the meeting at anything on the agenda, but this is the time anything is not on the agenda. So any takers, there's a hand back there. Beat it to the punch. Only, well, yeah, he has five fingers. Yeah. Welcome, sir.
Shall I move it up so you can speak in, sir?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Clerk.
Thank you. We still could have heard Gene, though.
That's right.
Yes.
Careful, Susan.
Gene Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road, Ferndale, Washington. As most of you that know me know that I have a little bit of a problem with the size, scope, and culture of the bureaucracy. Being commander and president of three veterans organizations, and a state officer on two other of the veterans organizations, and what's happening with the VA right now, you understand why I sometimes get a little upset at bureaucracy. But I had an issue today in Ferndale. I'm up on Church Road, and today they were digging up in front of my house. And there's a new water line that runs from the Ferndale water line to my box, and then my box into the house now. Well, they were digging out the main street where the new Ferndale line is, and the big bucket hit that water line, bent it, and crushed it some. I did take pictures, by the way. I then called the city, no names, called the city today, and I told him about it. It was still bare. I was still taking pictures. I did go to the supervisor, the guy in the orange hat, and I said, looks like your bucket hit that and bent it a little bit. He says, oh, it's okay. Well, when I came out with my camera and started taking pictures, three guys then went into the middle of the road with a very big wrench, and put it around the thing and went it down and re-rounded it. Which, of course, weakens it more than it was if it had just left it the way it was. Because any time you play with copper, it's going to weaken it. And then, of course, they came in and they covered it all up. I called the city and said, okay, here's what they did. They got a big wrench. I got the guys in the hole with the big wrench doing this. And the person that works for the city said to me, well, that's if it breaks, that's the city's responsibility. You know, this doesn't say City of Ferndale, doesn't say Whatcom County, doesn't say State of Washington, doesn't say United States federal government. Money. This is my money, as is all money that all four of those governments spend. So when somebody says it's the city's responsibility, I'm sorry, it's going to be my responsibility because it's going to be me that pays for it. And I hope that we could add something into our employee handbook for this city that says the city has nothing of its own, the state has nothing of its own, the county has nothing of its own, and federal, unless they take it from somebody else. So it's not going to be the city's responsibility to pay for it. It's going to be mine and every other member of this city. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for the open comment period? Sir, come forward, please. Welcome.
You may call me sir.
Papa John, 6072 Malloy Avenue, Malloy Adult Family Home. Remember, adult is spelled with a U, not with an O. I'm going to do a pun and point to ponder. And I, unfortunately, the one that was the pun was specifically aimed at isn't here. But now, Colonel Ingram, you're going to have to bear with me as I let you know the sad news in your case relative to my promotion. I got promoted, and I wanted to tell Keith about it, especially because I think he put me in for the promotion. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure. Because I have now gone from major headache to general nuisance. And you can see on my shoulders, I'm wearing the stars proudly. So, Colonel Ingram, I'm sorry, but I now outrank you. So, sorry about that. Don't let it go to your head. You know, life is rough for all of us at times. Now, the second that's supposed to be, it will be serious. I may have told you this before, but if I did, pretend I didn't, okay? Because I tell people at my age, I am can no longer, I not only cannot draw jump to conclusions, I cannot even jog my memory. But I am an artist, remember the artistry? I can draw blanks. And here's the point, though. I made this up myself. This is a parable. Now, think about the truth of it. I'm serious when I say this, okay? There was an emperor. Take that back. Start all over again. There was this law that the people of the world got sick and tired of. They got fed up with this particular law. They felt bound by the law. They felt captured by the law. They felt held down by the law. So they got together to vote on this law, do a plebiscite. And overwhelmingly, they voted against the law. Over 90% of the people voted against the law. The law? The law of gravity. The point, truth is truth. And the truth that I am under has a name above all names. There's only one truth as far as I'm concerned, and he has a name. And so my point there is, not that any of us that I see in this room are particularly crowd followers, but I share this with you so you can share it with others. If the crowd's going the wrong direction, that doesn't change the truth at all. If you think you can outvote the law of gravity, just get on a high tower and jump. And when it comes to truth, you have two options. Accept it or reject it. If you reject it, you pay the consequences. Food for thought.
Thank you. Anyone else for the open comment period? One more. Welcome.
Good evening, Council. My name is Yvonne Goldsmith, and I live at 5840 Church Road, and I came home from work the other day, and I noticed there were two glasses of water on my sink. And I thought, what is he doing? I almost poured him out, and then I said, no, he's got to make a point here, right? And so he said, taste that glass. Tasted it. Taste that glass. Tasted it. The glass on the right was a little lighter, or had a different levity to it. And it's the new water. And it was delicious, so thank you.
Really?
And it was clear.
And it was very clear.
Interesting. Well, we'll hear more about that coming right up. Well, okay, anyone else from the audience? No. Okay, next up is this consent agenda before you. Councilperson Birch?
Can I just ask Chef Olinger a quick question? That's the title on it. That's your title on this document.
Well, you're going to have a chance to talk to him because he's going to have a water softening update. So would you like to do it then? Or?
No, it's regarding the fats, oils, and grease.
Oh, okay, sure. Would you like to come forward, Chef Olinger?
It's nothing. You know, there's a couple of typos. It's F instead of FOJ. But have you contacted all the businesses?
We've taken flyers and best management practice sheets out to them that they can put in their kitchen. But we aren't really, we're not going out to businesses and working with them on a fog control plan yet. The new business owners are receiving a fog control plan, but the current ones aren't. So we're just slowly trying to gear up for the program. And the $1,000 fine just seemed way too stringent. It would be, you know, difficult for us to impose a fine like that on anyone. So we wanted to go with the smaller increments, smaller stages, just to get people's attention so they're willing to work with us instead of having a big, heavy hammer.
And we're on a 3-year program to get it done.
Well, there was a 1-year grandfather, from what I understand, but I can go back and check on that. Sometime around November, December, when things slow down, we were going to start contacting business owners.
I, as a business owner, have not received any information from the city.
Yeah, and you don't.
Regarding
the ones that we actually took flyers out to are the restaurants.
Right.
The ones that we felt were going to have the most trouble complying with the regulations. I don't think you're going to have any trouble with the type of business that you have.
Right. And can you tell me how much time I do have, what my final date would be approximately?
I would have to check what the ordinance says, but we're going to try to give people as much leeway as possible.
Thank you.
Okay. Councilor Hansen?
I'd like to not pull this off the agenda, but to take a point of personal privilege regarding that blue thing that's behind you, Gary, and allow a couple of ladies that came specifically tonight to show that, to not only the audience but the council, and maybe a very short word of explanation.
Okay.
Who's going to speak?
Kind of an explanation of the consent agenda?
It's
don't fight over it.
It's on
so
the
I think he's calling some people from the audience to come forward and do something with this sign.
He said he was not going to do that.
How long have you known?
Obviously, you have no control.
Apparently not. The Ferndale Downtown Association's newest project is to have banners for downtown Ferndale. When the baskets are not up and when the Christmas decorations are not up. So these will fly like from the middle of September through the middle of November, and then again after Christmas. They'll be it'll be a nice bright blue. The Ferndale lettering will be similar to what the city uses on their official documents, and then that is a fern for Ferndale. And we have the date we have is the date that Ferndale became a community, not the date that it became incorporated. So we're using the date 1874, and that's the date that the county commissioners of Whatcom County designated JAM, which our name was at the time, as a voting precinct community. So that's the date we're using. And we will also explain that thoroughly on our website and the city's website. So if you have any comments, we're going to order next week, so let me know if you have any comments. Yes.
These are going to be hung where every basket is now?
Not where every basket, because the first 6 we are paying for with our own money, and then we're going to go out and fundraise for the rest of the money and talk to businesses.
And they're going to be high enough that
they'll be up there on their,
they're
the
not
bracket.
Block your vision when you're driving.
No, so the bracket is high enough so it won't block vision.
All right. Okay, good. I like it.
They're a very similar size to the Old Settlers banner that was up last week.
Right.
The difference is the Old Settlers banner does not have a lower bar.
And ours will.
Their bracket will.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to remove it because the other member doesn't want it.
Mr. Mayor, may I move the approval of the consent agenda?
Second.
Move and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay, now we have the capital projects update, and then Council, I want to move the agenda around. I want to move the water softening update to right behind the capital projects update, and then we'll be able to get our employees home at an earlier time. So capital projects update is on the agenda right now. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Council. My name's Katie Ratter. I'm the project manager for Public Works. I've got a couple of updates for you. So first on the list is Church Road. Church Road's moving right along. There's, I think, at least 4 crews out there at any one time doing work. They're working on the water improvements that include, as you know, converting Central City over to city water. We figure by the end of this week, all of that work will be done, so all of Central City customers will be receiving City of Ferndale water. The crews are also working on roadway excavation, which means basically digging out the old poor road, widening it, putting in new gravel. Once the water work is done, they'll resume installing the storm. I think we have about 5,000 feet of storm pipe to install, so that'll happen probably next week. We've got some walls on the back of the sidewalk, especially in the Heights area, where we're going to be starting that work probably next week as well. So things are moving right along. We're within our expected budget, and we're still on schedule for fall completion. I don't know if anybody has questions about that.
Councilperson Ingram?
Don't forget to take your August picture with you.
Oh, okay. I'll do that. Thank you. The reminder.
Mayor, quick question. You know, I guess probably more for Bo than Katie. Are we going to get a list soon of what the priorities? He was going to put together priorities for all the building maintenance we needed to do. Is he still working on that?
Probably not now. He's on vacation for 2 weeks. But he is working on that.
He'll be back tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
You ratted him out.
I'm sure he's thinking about it while he's on vacation.
I have no doubt.
Yeah.
Strenuously.
He should be. Sam would be.
Next on the list is Barrett Road. Thank you for approving our portion of that contract that went through on the consent agenda. We anticipate that work gets started in mid this month, or probably later this month, late part of this month. There's 15 working days for the city's portion, so that's approximately 3 weeks. Again, it's weather dependent. And that work includes digging out the soft spots in the road, grinding the existing asphalt, and then doing a new pavement on top, and that's between Main Street and Smith Road on Barrett. So if anybody has any questions about that. Okay. Last on the list, I asked Wendy if she'd like me to share anything. She's running the Neubauer project where we're expanding the pond, and so she let me know that they issued the notice to proceed today. This week, the contractor will be working on killing some invasive plant species out there. They're setting up their BMPs, which are best management practices, silt fence, catch basin socks, that sort of thing, so we don't get silt where it's not supposed to be. They'll start dewatering the pond. We've got an agreement with Hovander Park to be able to put that water into their field, so that was nice of the county to help us out with that. And excavation of the pond will start next week. So that's all I have.
Questions? No. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll move the water softening update to right now. Welcome, Chef Mike.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. I'm Mike Olinger, the Chief Water and Wastewater Treatment Plant Operator. So we we're moving along on the project. We've got about 95% of the electrical conduit in place. The air piping is being installed. We have air pneumatic valves on our softening system that are ran. Influent piping changes have been completed. We had to split the flow coming from the wells. We had to section off the chlorine from going to the RO units. So that was kind of our only major two shutdowns that we went through so far. They cut a large hole in our south end of our treatment plant. That's where the skids will come in. The RO skids will come in through that large hole. They're building a road that comes into that location, and then we're going to have double doors on that for the future. Contractor was installing a bridge beams today. There's two bridge beams. We have a bridge beam it's a bridge crane that runs across the RO units for pulling pumps and motors in the future for maintenance. And let's see, our RO skids should arrive on August 22nd. The membranes are going to arrive on September 1st, and we're scheduled to be in operation on September 30th. That's all I have.
And prediction of how long you think for the whole city will flush through?
Plumber talk.
Well, probably once we're comfortable with the units and we know we're not breaking down every other day. We will reduce the reservoirs quite low. We'll turn them over, and then we'll probably go through a flushing program. So at least a month.
And you heard, you know, the member of the public say that, you know, they flipped over from Central City to City Water, and they enjoyed the taste. On a regular basis, I would get them weekly, but I haven't received a water complaint in probably 30 days. And so is the hardness level down now?
Our hardness level is the highest right now. It's currently the same as it was last August, September. And then right around November, December, it dropped down a couple points. And then by June, it was coming back up. So it's actually harder now than it was when we first went online. I think people really notice the difference in taste. Just, you know, what you're used to, tasting. And then, of course, the spots on different types of equipment, car washing and stuff. But I think people are just getting used to the taste. And it's going to change again. So some people are going to like it, and some people might not like it as much. A lot of people like hard water taste.
Well, if we get any water complaints, just refer them, you know, give them the Goldsmith's phone number.
Okay. And then, of course, as always, we're going to be happy to go out and check customers if they have a problem.
Yeah. Okay, any questions, Council? Yeah. Still can't be soon enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And
you already hope you're ready. Public hearing on the lot averaging ordinance. It is your floor, sir.
Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. We have before you a public hearing on several different chapters, and it's all related, most of it is related to one thing, and that is lot averaging. It's a complicated subject to understand, and I'll go into it in just a second, but first I'm going to talk about some of the, I guess, low-hanging fruit, if you will, that are also subject to these approvals. The low-hanging fruit occurs in our subdivision chapter 17, where we wanted to clarify some things in there, starting off with chapter 17.28, which is a purpose section of our development requirements for subdivisions. In the purpose statement, we're proposing that we clarify some language related to the improvement requirements. Where what we did a couple of years ago was state that whether you're a short plat or a long plat is 4 units or less, 4 lots or less, and a long plat is 5 units or more, that regardless of whether you're doing a short plat or a long plat, the development requirements are going to be the same. In other words, you can't simply propose a small subdivision in order to find a loophole in the development requirements. That was our intent, but as we learn more every day, and as we now have a fantastic insurance provider and a fantastic city attorney, our depth of understanding gets better. Where we cannot just do a one-size-fits-all for development. It needs to be proportionate to the impact, where while short plats and long plats are going to be treated the same, they're treated the same based on the impact of each individual subdivision. So you might have a very large subdivision that actually has less frontage improvements, for example, than a small short plat, just because of the context of what's going on in that location. And that's what we're changing here today, is to make it clear, and I think in practice we've applied this, but we want to make sure that the code reflects it, saying that the requirements shall be proportional to the impact of the proposal, consistent with RCW 82.02.020, which is one of those magic RCW Revised Code of Washington sections that say we need to have that nexus and proportionality, and subject to SEPA environmental review where applicable. And then we also say, when the type of and intensity of future uses cannot be determined, the city reserves the right to authorize limited infrastructure improvements at the subdivision stage and to require full improvements at the time of future development. Now, I'm not going to read all of our changes, but I am reading that one. The concept there is for residential single-family lot subdivisions, we know precisely what the use is going to be. It's going to be a single-family residence. For commercial and industrial permits or subdivisions, we want to push them in the direction of going with a binding site plan, which gives them more flexibility, gives them more opportunity. But for multi-family subdivisions, or really subdivisions in our downtown core, there's such a variety of what could go there. Is it going to be 8 multifamily units? Is it going to be 20? Is it going to be commercial down below or residential up top? We simply might not know at the time that they're subdividing, and they might have a real good reason for subdividing it. Maybe it's for lending purposes. Maybe they can't get a loan on the full amount, but they can get a loan from this bank and a loan from that bank if they have 2 lots. So what this allows us to do is to say, we don't know what the future use is. You don't know what the future use is, or even if you think you do, you might not know because it might not be approved. We're going to let you subdivide, but we're not going to say you're going to need a 12-inch line because you might not. We're not going to say you need a 6-inch line because you might not. We're not going to say that you need to do the full frontage improvements because we don't know. It depends on the proposal. So this allows us to subdivide for the purpose of subdividing, and then make sure that we memorialize on the subdivision, the recorded documents, that you don't get anything except for this additional lot. You don't get any assumption that your frontage improvements or your infrastructure is done. That waits until later. This is a very development-friendly way of going, but it also protects the city, too, because it ensures that if in our desire to work with an applicant, we say, okay, we'll assume that you're going to do less. And then they do more, and they say, you can't ask us for any more. This allows us to be more precise in the requirements and to establish those requirements at the time that the actual impacts are occurring. All right. Moving on a little bit to Chapter 17.24, so I guess we're going back slightly. Really minor change. Mylars. I don't know if you're familiar with what Mylars are. They're basically wax copies that are recorded, and they tend to last longer than anything else that you could imagine if you were back in 1900. Now we're in 2014, and we have something called digital copies. So what we've required forever and ever is when you're recording a subdivision, you come in with 2 Mylar copies, wax paper copies. One goes to the city, one goes to the auditor. The auditor doesn't accept those anymore. They don't want them. So a lot of subdividers end up throwing it away or just keeping it. We're just doing away with the mention of precisely what we need and allowing us to say we just need 2 copies. All right, that's kind of the housekeeping. Now to the real subject. Since at least 1974, the city has based its subdivision ordinance on minimum lot size requirements. That was one of the major tests to see if you could subdivide for single-family residential purposes. And that's what really all of our city reflects, is basically what the city was saying is, we don't care how large your lot is. You can build a lot as big as you want. We only care about how small it is, where you can't build a lot that's smaller than this size, primarily for aesthetic purposes. 1974, it was right after we had the boom of the refineries. We were still in the post-war era where the suburban council committee said California mindset prevailed. And as a result, Ferndale tends to have less density than almost any other jurisdiction, including Blaine, believe it or not. And that's okay. Except for when you apply a couple of different tests to it. First, the Growth Management Act, and you know, we sometimes debate whether the Growth Management Act is a wise course of action or if it's social engineering, but it is the law of the land, and the Growth Management Act requires that cities achieve urban densities. It doesn't define what urban densities are, but it does seek to make sure that cities can actually achieve those relatively higher densities, so you don't have large tracts of land in the city of Ferndale that are developed to 1 unit per 5 acres. that's more appropriate outside in the unincorporated county, is what the Growth Management Act says. The city of Ferndale's done a relatively decent job of achieving what we would consider urban densities, generally between 3 and 5 units per acre. Part of the reason, though, why we are achieving those higher densities is because the majority of subdivisions use something called the planned unit development process, which was developed in, I believe, the 90s as an alternative method of subdivision, allowing you to achieve higher densities, to cluster subdivisions to avoid wetlands and stormwater ponds, possibly to get views, sometimes to make the lot size smaller. And that was the alternative. But about 60% of our lots now are created through this alternative mechanism. What we've seen is the majority of developers actually think that this is what the market demands. Smaller home sizes or to achieve a certain density, when in a conventional subdivision, if you've got a wetland or you've got an irregularly shaped lot, you end up losing a lot because you can't make up for it. You can't get 6,500 square feet or 8,500 square feet or 10,500 square feet otherwise. So the PUD allows you to get the densities that you'd otherwise expect to do. And as we have been looking at this, we started to say, well, gosh, you know, why not use this for all subdivisions? What's the harm? And as we went through it, I don't see what the harm is. And that's why we are proposing a lot averaging ordinance that seeks to allow flexibility for the subdivider to determine what's right for them. Maybe they feel that smaller lots are better. Maybe they feel that they want to take advantage of some views and do some larger lots. Or maybe they want to do more of a traditional subdivision and have most of the lots be the same. So what this ordinance does is it does away with the 6,500, 8,500, and 10,500 square foot minimum lot size. It replaces them with an average lot size, 6,000 square foot, 8,000 square foot, and 10,000 square foot average lot size. It also establishes, based on the comprehensive plan, a range of densities that must be achieved. Now, remember, the comprehensive plan is the guiding document for the city. The Ferndale Municipal Code needs to be consistent with that comprehensive plan, not the other way around. And for whatever reason, while our comprehensive plan clearly establishes a range of densities, including a minimum and maximum, we've decided to ignore that in the Ferndale Municipal Code for all these years. We haven't been challenged by it, but we could be challenged by it. So what we're proposing to do is to take those average or those density ranges in the comprehensive plan, modify them slightly to reflect our definitions of density, net density versus gross density, and I'd be happy to explain that, but and let me see some head nods if I need to, because then I can go back and explain it. But right now, moving along.
Okay.
Okay. And I see our city administrator is nodding as well.
He's nodding off.
where our comprehensive plan and our municipal code will now match for densities. This, again, results in a lot of flexibility for the developer. It gives consistent expectations for the city, and I'll touch on that just very briefly. What do we benefit from with having consistent expectations? Katie was just here talking about Church Road. She was then talking about Barrett Road, but Church Road is the main one with single family. It's possible that the properties on either side of Church Road could be developed right now with 1 unit per 10 acres. It's possible that they might be developed with 5 or 6 units per acre. That's an order of magnitude difference. There are some large properties there. Let's say that there's a 10-acre property, maybe about the average. If it was developed with 1 unit per 5 acres, that's 2 units total. If it was developed with 6 units per acre, that's 60 units. The types of infrastructure that are necessary to serve 60 units as compared to 2 units and then maintain it are immense. When the city has invested millions and millions of dollars on infrastructure based on a reasonable density, and then we only have 2 units built on there, that's a loss for the taxpayers, where we could have just put in a 3/4 inch, in theory, line to serve those. So in order for our Public Works Department to be able to go forward and seek grants, and in order to justify those grants or the expenditures of funds or bonds or what have you, we need to be able to give the Public Works Department the information necessary to make that good argument, that we know what is ultimately going to go there. And if we're now looking at a 20 or 30 year lifespan for that infrastructure or longer, these are good decisions to be able to make and to be relied on. Last thing, and I know it's a lot to digest, we, in order to accommodate this, are proposing, we still need a minimum lot size. We can't have a developer just come in and build a 1,000-square-foot lot. That's too small. The Planning Commission recommended a 3,500-square-foot minimum lot size, and that works with the math as long as we keep our setbacks at 20 feet in the front, and if we reduce the side setbacks from 8 feet down to 5 feet, which is absolutely okay, and you see it in most jurisdictions, and the rear setback from 15 feet down to 10 feet, then a 3,500-square-foot lot is definitely achievable. The math works. There is the possibility that the council might wish to consider reducing the front setback down from 20 feet down to another lower number, provided that the garage entrance that's directly facing the street is still 20 feet away. That way they can still have their two cars parked in front of the garage if necessary. With that, a lot to digest. I don't know what you might be more or less wondering about, but I'd be happy to answer any questions. There is one public hearing scheduled, and you can vote your approval in one motion.
So, public hearing, questions of a technical nature. Councilperson Watson.
Just a question for the lot averaging. The text says, if the result is at or less than the average lot requirement. So, I guess it's a mathematical question. So, if the result is meets the minimum lot requirement or it's less than it, why would it be less than that? Am I not reading this correctly?
I don't know if you're reading it correctly or not, but the concept would be the city would like to establish lots within a range from the minimum to that lot average.
Okay.
That way we keep it in that safe zone, whereas if you had a lot average that was greater than 6,000 square feet, say, then you are actually not able to achieve the densities that you're looking at. So you want it at the average or less in order to fit in there.
Okay.
It's a 180 degree shift of what we have right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Further technical questions from council? Okay, seeing none. We'll go to the public hearing portion. I don't believe anyone signed up, but we'll still ask the public to come forward and speak. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members signed up. Since someone signed up, I won't even read that portion. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you're given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name, address for the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the group. So we have no one on our sign-up sheet, so the sign-up sheet has no one. So would anyone from the audience like to come forward, because we're going to open the public hearing at 6:38:52. Would anyone like to come forward? Right there. Welcome, sir.
Yeah. DJ Van Wertheisen, a builder. Address? Ferndale, 7231 Secluded Lane. And I'm a builder. I build quite a bit in Ferndale. This proposal, I wasn't aware of it until just maybe a week ago. I think John informed me of it. Basically, what this is going to do is this is throwing a lot of common sense into the ring. And it's going to allow these evil builders, developers, to actually build things that are affordable for a lot of the people that can't go over that $250,000 range. Or, you know, we'll even run into lots of scenarios where we could probably even start marketing houses in that 200 to 250 range, in the heart of Ferndale. And right now, that's really impossible to do for the size of lot that's required. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's bringing a lot of common sense into this, and if it's managed well, I don't see a negative. So,
any questions for this guest? Oh, you better stay. Councilperson Watson?
So would you envision yourself just doing, like, short plats, like, or just a lot here and there, or would you actually do some sort of long plat with using the lot averaging?
So it 100% depends on the circumstance, and that's what this is doing. This is opening up. For instance, I have a piece of property on Malloy, and I'm going to be put in development next June. And I almost pulled the trigger on, right now it's set up for 12 lots. And I almost pulled the trigger a year ago doing a short plat, but then I was informed that for some reason the city of Ferndale requires the same infrastructure for 4 lots than 12 lots. So markets changed quite a bit in the last 18 months. Today I wouldn't do that no matter what the circumstance is, because it's better to have more lots. I would even consider relooking at that and trying to maybe get another 6 or 7 lots out of it, because the lots we have set up right now are 10,000 square feet. So could be an opportunity right there for me.
Okay, thank you.
But the bottom line is it will, and everybody thinks, oh, it'll just put more money in the builder or developer. No, it doesn't work like that. It actually helps that consumer that has this cap. So,
any more questions for this guest? So before you leave, in Ferndale, we don't ever want to hear the term referred to as an evil builder. We don't believe in that statement.
The last time last time I stood here, I got attacked pretty good. Well, so, anyway.
It was never the term evil, though.
Yeah. Anyway, I kind of said that.
Okay. Thank
lighthearted.
You. Thank you. We don't believe that. A member for the audience, come forward, please. Welcome.
Hi. Good evening. I'm Yvonne Goldsmith, and I live at 5840 Church Road. And I also have the great honor of serving on our Planning Commission. And we all felt really good about bringing this forward to you and recommending it, because it does open up the door a little more for other people to have home ownership. I think that's really important. It's part of the American dream, you know, that little white picket fence with a home, a dog, 1.5 kids. All right, so I'd like to see you say yes.
Poor little half-child.
Thank you. Councilperson Mutchler?
Mrs. Goldsmith, thank you. I didn't check the record. What was the final vote of the Planning Commission on this proposal?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I have old memory. Do
you remember?
I think
no one has voted against this.
Thank you. Right. I thought we all passed it.
7-0.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good. Any more? On a roll. You can come forward. Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. Nope. You want to read in the comment?
Yeah.
Sure.
It was never our intent to introduce common sense, and so I'm kind of thinking that we might want to pull this out because we don't have too many.
It hasn't passed yet.
DJ indicated that he has a property on Malloy. A couple years back, we had a property on Vista Drive, just coming out of the recession, actually, so I think it was back in 2010. West side of Vista Drive, I think 5863, as this person indicates. He proposed on a 2.5-acre piece of property, 4 units. So it would result in, 2/3 of an acre for each unit. At that time, he was being informed by a consultant that it was the right thing to do coming out of the recession, that the market in Ferndale was for very large lots, and that one of those lots might even have a view Mount Baker. So he proceeded ahead with the short plat and chose not to record it. And so I'm going to read this in to the record. Dear members of the Ferndale City Council, I am writing in support of the city's residential single-family lot sizing lot size averaging ordinance on the council agenda at tonight's April 4th, 2014 meeting. I own a 2.5-acre parcel of undeveloped land at 5863 Vista Drive. I purchased the land in 2007 with a vision of developing a modest subdivision of single-family homes to be marketed to young families or retirees. My vision remains the same, and I am willing and able to invest in the project, but my past attempts to come up with a plan that met the city's ordinances and public works regulations have been frustrating, expensive, and ultimately unsuccessful. 2 weeks ago, my attorney, Bradley Swanson, accompanied me to a meeting with community development staff, Yori Burnett and Haley Miller. Our objective was to check in and see how the city is currently approaching new development. The meeting was cordial and productive. Mr. Burnett informed us that the City Council is actively seeking to increase density in accordance with the Growth Management Act, and in particular to encourage development in the area near downtown to support walk-in traffic for local merchants. Mr. Burnett described the lot averaging proposal, which you are considering. He subsequently provided us with a copy of the study and recommendations. I am strongly supportive of AB number 1408002 and believe it is in the best interest of the city and its residents and landowners. For my land, the current lot minimum of 6,500 square feet makes the site difficult to develop. Being able to average the lot sizes provides substantially more flexibility for planning a subdivision. If the measure is adopted, I am much more likely to move forward on a planning process than if not. Then he goes into, while lot averaging will be a significant improvement, the change itself will not necessarily be sufficient and make small-scale projects like mine feasible. Setbacks may need to be modified to support developing smaller lots. Infrastructure improvements such as stormwater, utilities, and a small dead-end road will be required to service the lots. And he goes from there. Ultimately, he was very thankful that he did not subdivide in 2010. Because if he had subdivided and created four lots and sold one or two of them, he would not be able to take advantage of this now, because he would be dealing with an existing subdivision in which the other property owners would have much more influence of, they've got their view, they've got their land, and not being able, and preventing the further subdivision potentially. So he was very thankful if the council chose to move forward.
Okay, so that'll end the public hearing part at 6:47:07. The issue is before you, City Council. Councilperson Watson has her hand up.
Question for Yori. We talked about it a little bit in committee. I want to make sure I understand the minimum lot size. If you had an existing neighborhood and with like more than 7,000 square feet and someone wanted to come in, tear down a house, they could indeed do that with a 3,500 minimum?
No, not automatically, because then we would be looking at the average density, right? So they have that range of densities between 3 and 7 units per acre. So if you had a 7,000 square foot lot, even a 10,000 square foot lot, it's a quarter of an acre. Mm-hmm. The maximum that you would be able to get, depending on the zone, 7,000 square foot lot, so it's a 6,500 square foot zone, you would probably only still be able to get either the one unit or possibly subdivided into two there. You wouldn't be able, well, it was 7,000 square foot. No, you wouldn't be able to subdivide it, I don't think.
Okay. So I think I misunderstood then in committee, because the 3,500 minimum is only if you're doing the lot averaging?
Yeah, and you have to do the lot averaging.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'd have to make up for that, mm-hmm, with a larger one in order to get that overall average of 6,000 square feet.
Okay. So if someone wanted to do it, I guess my main concern is an existing neighborhood, someone would come in, buy up two or three of the lots, tear down the house, and stick two where there used to be one, which would really change the neighborhood if that happened.
You'd really need 12,000 square feet to even start thinking about that, because you'd have to average 6,000 square feet for each. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were able to buy up, five houses in a row, I don't know where the tipping point is, but you would start to be able to get greater densities or more lots out of that.
Okay.
But I think you won't be seeing, as a result of this, one regularly sized lot being divided into two.
And may I ask one more question, Mary?
Sure.
It's on different. It was on the other topic. It's when the developers come in and do the infrastructure, it says once specific development is known, you'll have them do some work. And I'm trying to understand the timeline. So they'll come in and do what they would normally do, and then if they get toward the end, you'll decide that they need more, or 2 years will go by? And
potentially 10 years could go by.
So you'll go back to the developer in 10 years and say?
No, that developer is then done.
Oh, thank you.
They've subdivided the property. They might not have done, conceivably, anything that's visible to the naked eye. It might just be just illegal. There's now a lot line in between that no one would know about. A new purchaser buys it 5 years down the line, 6 months down the line, 20 years down the line. And then we say, we need a site plan from you. What are the existing conditions? Well, we've got this sidewalk or whatever. What do we need those existing conditions to change to as a result of your specific development? And that's when those changes start to happen.
So they can't just use whatever was left behind. They would have to come up to whatever your standards are at that point in time, or just they're...
That's where the nexus and proportionality comes in, where maybe they do have an existing sidewalk. It might be 30 years old, but you know what? It's good enough because they're not doing something that would need an increase in that. Okay. But maybe it's a 60-unit development, and we're going to need a new stoplight or something. This allows us to react to the development more than the subdivision.
Okay.
I would like to say one more thing about the main part of it. The Building Industry Association has been very involved with us. Linda Twitchell attended. She's a public affairs person. Attended, I think, all of our Planning Commission meetings and put the word out. We didn't get a lot of builders come in, but she said that the feedback she was receiving was similar to what DJ said, that, wow, really? You know, Ferndale is wanting to do such a thing that would really help development? That was one thing. Future-wise, who we've heard of and we've spoken negatively about, has also talked to us. They are in support of this, too. So this might be one of those rare ordinances where we get in the past, anti-development was a perception organization supporting it, and a very pro-development organization supporting it. And those don't come along too often.
Councilor Watson?
I'm sorry. I just want to clarify that you are changing the setbacks with this ordinance. Because you had talked about it, but this ordinance will definitely change the setbacks.
As proposed,
yes.
Unless there is an amendment made. The minimum lot size would be 3,500.
Mm-hmm.
The front setback would stay the same at 20.
20.
The side yards would go from 8 down to 5, and the rear yard would go from 15 down to 10 for a minimum. It is conceivable that, you know, there would be much larger setbacks on individual lots.
So you're not worried about the open space percentage and all that? That's just going to work itself out?
That will work itself out. As far as the minimums, we have some things in there that make it clear that we are looking at the preservation of open space, and we have language in there to protect that, that we want development to consider existing views, so we can talk to them about that. They do not legislate precisely what it needs to be, but it gives us the in. So when DJ comes in, if he says this, we can say, have you thought about the fact that you have a Mount Baker view that might be possible from all lots?
But you can't make him the way the ordinance is written.
No, and we could not make him, at least for open space, because there are court cases that say specifically you cannot legislate a one-size-fits-all open space requirement.
Okay.
Councilperson Metzler?
So with just about anything that comes to council, I always look for the losers and the downside people. And this is hard to find them, as you just indicated. But it appears to me the only loser might be that person who has a smaller lot, maybe an acre, who wants to put some big homes on it. If I understand this correctly, the only way to have a lot, not larger homes, but larger lots, is you need a very large parcel, say 20, 30 acres, where you could have a few larger parcels. They could even be an acre. But on much of that land, you're going to have higher density. It sort of averages out. So a developer, if they want some estate-type places, they could do that as long as they have enough property to, in addition, have smaller lots. Is that really the only pathway to have a larger lot?
Yes, you would need to average those larger lots out with the smaller lots. And depending on the size and configuration of your property, that's really going to dictate how large your large lots can be and how small your small lots can be.
And then you, obviously, if you have a smaller lot, you need to adjust the setbacks in order to fit homes on there. Was there a reason staff went with the 20-foot front? We changed three of them, but they left the 20 as just...
The main reason why we didn't propose changing it is I've been up here for about 35 minutes now talking about these different things, and we've only touched on a lot of the things once. Didn't want to add another layer of change to it. The Planning Commission, Commissioner Goldsmith, didn't mention sometimes staff is trying to lead commissions and councils into concepts. In this case, I think that the Planning Commission really wanted to move forward all-encompassing. So they felt comfortable with making more modifications, and council would be able to consider making modifications as well tonight.
So if somebody, I think Councilmember Ingram just mentioned garages, if the council changed the front setbacks from 20 to, say, 10, like it, for example, is on Molloy Village, does that affect parking? Does that affect how much parking is required on site?
We do not consider parking in the garage parking. So the requirement of the code is that you have to have at least two off-street parking spaces, and that the parking spaces have to be 9 by 19 feet, more or less.
That's typically in front of the garage.
That's typically in front of the garage, but the decision to put it in front of the garage is really with the property owner or the developer. They could reorient the driveway or the garage so it kind of goes in on the side. They could make it so that the driveway is on the side of the garage. That just happens to be the most common place of putting
it. But to answer concerns that I would have and others would have, regardless of the front setback, it could be 0, it could be 20, it could be 40, there would still be place for two cars outside of the garage.
That is correct.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
I would not support going all the way down to 0.
Thank you. Councilperson Ingram?
Covered.
Covered. Oh, great. Okay. So, Councilperson Hansen?
I move that we pass Agenda Bill 14-08-002.
Second. Okay, we move and second it. Further discussion? Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I'd like to float this at Council to make the only amendment that I would care to make would be to lower the front setbacks from what it is now to 10 feet. I would suggest as an example to council, and they may or may not even be aware of that, is that I went through, let me make the motion first, a move that we go from 20 to 10 in the front setback. Then I'll discuss it if there's a second.
Is there a second to that? Okay. Seeing none, that amendment dies. Back to the original motion by Councilperson Hansen. Issue before you, seeing no further discussion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you, Council.
Good job. You already know you did a lot of time on that, so thank you.
Don't make me sorry.
Thank you to the guests. When's it goes into effect, Yuri?
It'll go into effect, next Monday?
It's 5 days after you.
Yeah.
5 working days.
Yeah, I'll sign tomorrow, so.
Can you sign without Sam?
Next up on the agenda is the pro and con committee approval for the gas tax ballot issue. Councilperson Mutchler?
I would like to recuse myself on this agenda item, please.
Okay.
I need to recuse myself as well, sir.
You can't do it then.
I don't think we have enough people to do it.
Unless this is a resolution as opposed to an ordinance.
Sam said this was a resolution.
Sam said it was a resolution. We do it with three.
You have to because you have a deadline. But I can't vote.
I believe Sam answered that.
Yeah, he did. He did here. So it was a resolution.
It has to be a majority of the people voting.
Right. Voting.
Not a specific number.
Correct.
Okay. And then for audience clarification, right now we have on the pro committee two members signed up. The committee can expand. It can be more. There are two people on the pro committee, Wendy Lawrence and John Mutchler.
on the con committee, and again, this person could be the committee chairman or they could appoint other people on the committee. The con committee right now consists of Yvonne Goldsmith. So you have two committees before you. They can expand and do that, but we really do need a vote to move forward.
Move to approve.
Also.
Okay, move and second. So we have three people voting. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion goes forward. Thank you. It's a tough one. Okay, so discussion on the fireworks ban restrictions. We'll go to council for the discussion first, and we'll open up to audience.
Do you mind just know where we left off, basically?
Well,
when last we left off, Intrepid and Explorers.
It's your meeting. So Councilperson Hansen had his hand up first.
I would prefer that we delay the decision so that it's not tonight, because we do have two council members absent, and we don't have a gun to our head requiring us to have this passed tonight.
I think this was just discussion only.
We know the clerk gave you this information earlier, later last week, and I agree with that decision, but I think we still should allow public comment.
Absolutely.
There are people here.
There were comments from council members in the social media that said we may pass this tonight.
No.
So.
No.
Okay, so would any council members like to make a comment before we open it to public?
Just to let people know, we did find
that
out...
That would be you, council
member? That would be me. We did find out from our insurer that they are not opposed to us having a location for fireworks, so the city could have a location for fireworks if we chose to ban it in the city but have our own location. So that was something we didn't know the last time we met.
Okay. Any other councilperson Ingram?
Well, Bertella... Who was the lady that was with you at...
Tammy Madsen.
She was in...
Brewster.
And said that's exactly what they've got. They've got this big area where all the families in town bring down their fireworks, and it's a party. It's an absolute party. She said they were there for hours. And that comment, probably more than most other things I've heard, encourages me to support a total ban, except on the 4th of July, in a city-designated spot. And they can just have a ball. And there'll be people that will obey it, and there'll be people that won't, but we all know that.
Now, again, for the audience and for the record, any sort of action by council won't be this meeting.
No.
But even if it was next meeting, it still would be a full 12-month period before you would enact that.
Correct.
This wouldn't be until 2016.
This is the discussion. Yeah. Okay, any further discussion by council? Any statements you'd like to make? Or Okay, we'll open it up to the audience. Would anyone from the audience like to come forward and speak on this? You drove all this way, you want to just come up and say something or say hi again? Or I have a taker.
Yes. See a fresh face.
Welcome, sir.
I've never spoke before. I wasn't a part of the previous discussion.
It's perfectly okay.
I just heard you're going to be discussing it, and
we'd love to hear your
okay.
Name
and address.
My name is Brian McIntosh, and I live on 2349 Nicholas Drive here in Ferndale.
Okay, thanks.
And September we moved here, my family and I. We moved into a house we built through a self-help program, and I remember while we were building, hearing about Bellingham banning fireworks. We call it Banningham. But I was astonished that the freedom, the right to celebrate our freedom, was being stripped from the people of Bellingham. And I couldn't help but think about the families who for generations have been celebrating in their homes this freedom that we have. I mean, it stands for everything that we believe in, in America. And my wife and I, we've lived in Custer until this last year. And on 6 acres, we were renting. And that was our one holiday where we would celebrate big. We'd have people over. We'd have family from California come up because it was just huge. Can't celebrate in California because of the fire danger, which we don't have here. It's not an issue. We were concerned, but thankful we weren't moving to Bellingham, because we love the 4th. It's our big family celebration. and we were concerned how it would play out in a city environment. And we had a great fourth this last year, last month. And we had fireworks. It brought the neighbors together. I enjoyed, you know, lighting off fireworks with my kids, teaching them responsibility, fireworks. I'm the son of a firefighter, which is kind of ironic. I really enjoy it, and I think it stands for our freedom. And I think it'd be a huge mistake to strip that from us. I just don't agree with it. I think it'd be missing the point. And as far as having a community spot, it sounds dangerous to me, because then you have a density of people with lots of fireworks going off in one spot, and it just sounds dangerous.
Other cities do it.
I don't know. I mean, I just think it's something for generations, for hundreds of years, we've enjoyed, especially in this area. It's real big. I think that
one more second.
A ban before and after is suitable. If you really have to ban something, give us a fourth, though. Give us a fourth. And let's keep Ferndale separate from Bellingham. We're not like them.
Okay.
I'm proud to be a citizen of Ferndale.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Next up. Welcome.
Hello. Peggy Upiano, 5988 Molloy. I just want to say I agree with everything he said. In addition to which, I also think that having the community celebration kind of invites a little bit of trouble, because you do have the density. To me, I think that would be more of a concern. So policing that, I think, would be difficult.
Do you echo his comment about one day? Or?
Yeah. I mean, it is for the fourth. I would even be happy with one day on either side, just so people knew, you know, when to expect it to begin and end. I mean, I agree with that. I think it's kind of crazy when you got it going, you know, from one end of the month to the other. But at the same time, yeah, I think, you know, it would be nice to let people celebrate in their own neighborhoods, for one thing. I mean, we've always enjoyed our get-togethers with just our neighbors. It's a time for us to catch up and, you know, which is a little more intimate environment, too, I might add. You know, chance to just get together and talk, whereas when you have one big, huge party, you don't really have quite the same situation. So,
thank you. Thank you. Anyone else like to come forward? Welcome, sir. Welcome again. Two comments in one night. Good job.
Three.
That's right.
Gene Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. The only time I shot off fireworks in Ferndale was the first 4th of July we were here. We had 1989. We had a couple Japanese teachers, because it was a large group of exchange students over, and we housed two of the teachers at our house, and they wanted to really see what the 4th of July was like, so I filled up my wheelbarrow with sand and stuck some bottle rockets in and shot it off. That's the only time I've ever done it. But I'll tell you, if you pass this, I'll be putting on my uniform with my Distinguished Flying Cross, my 11 Air Medals, my 2 Presidential Unit Awards, and my medals, and I will be shooting off fireworks. Because John Adams said, when we passed the Declaration of Independence, that the 4th of July will be celebrated with fireworks, bands, and parades. Don't take our freedoms away. Thank you.
You have to pull a band, too, then. Anyone else like to come forward?
Yes. Anyone not in the Goldsmith family would like to come?
Anyone on that row, come forward. Welcome again.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Goldsmith, and I live at 5840 Church Road. And I really would please don't take our fireworks away. And I do agree with the comments that have been up here tonight, with exception of one. I'm not going to go on the back porch and get dressed up. We do celebrate the 4th, okay, and fireworks are great, and if we have to put a time limit on it, then leave it to the 4th of July, please. I mean, this year I found those bottle rockets from 1989. I was so excited, and then I forgot to shoot them off, so now I'm going to have to leave them for next year.
That'd be interesting if they're still good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else? Welcome, sir. Anyone else that drove a long way? You know, if you drove a long way, you got to say something.
My name,
sir.
Welcome, thank you. My name's Carl Upiano. I live with Peggy. And at the last hearing, I spoke in favor of freedom and liberty vis-a-vis the proposed fireworks ban. The proper role of government is to protect the citizens' natural rights. And this is a matter of principle for me. I certainly realize that fireworks are hardly a necessity, and that people have the right to feel secure in their homes. So it would seem to me a ban on fireworks is completely defensible. But the pursuit of happiness is also a right. I believe that we already have laws against trespass, laws against shooting explosive incendiary devices into someone else's property. Sometimes rights are at odds, and compromise is necessary, as some speakers last time suggested. One council member mentioned that tolerance for fireworks is diminishing nationally. The police chief said good citizens would conform to the law. Not to put too fine a point on it, but we hear a lot about diversity and tolerance for many other sacred cows in our culture today. That wrecking ball swings both ways. Diversity and tolerance are the cornerstone of a free society, and conformity is the opposite of freedom. There's a quote that I like to throw out there every now and then. It goes, "Every question that comes up politically, I ask myself, is there a way to solve this issue with more freedom instead of less?" That's from Penn Jillette. I don't know if you know Penn and Teller. As I said last time, free people are happy people because freedom gives power to the people to pursue their own happiness. But, as Spider-Man once said, with great power comes great responsibility. Some people will abuse their power and act irresponsibly. They deserve to have their freedom and power curtailed. We have fines and prison terms for those irresponsible people. It's not fair for the rest of us for the bad actions of a few. Thank you.
Thank you. Carl, I want to mention, I love your statement. It bears repeating if you haven't read some things that Carl believes in. And when he asks people in terms of their involvement in politics, it's very simple. It's just show up. And I love it when you do that. It's like, just show up. You don't have to say anything. Just show up. Just be involved in politics. Just show up. So anyone else? Anyone likes to come forward? Aha! There he goes. It's a family tradition. Welcome, sir.
Upiano's right. Moving in on
Thank
the goldsmith.
Thank you for just showing up.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Arthur Upiano. I live at 5988 Malloy Avenue alongside my mother and my father. And at the last discussion of this topic, we heard from the police chief that a lot of discussion of the question of children's safety. Well, not too many years ago, I was one of those children launching fireworks in the cul-de-sac with my neighbors. And honestly, my parents did a pretty good job of monitoring my safety, and I have to admit, I felt quite secure. I wasn't convinced I was going to blow my hands off or burn myself with a sparkler. Now, the police chief cited a variety of national statistics on the subject of children injuring themselves with fireworks, but if we're going to apply national statistics to a law that's going to apply to Ferndale, then what's the sense in having a county council to enact these laws? We may as well just apply this entire law nationwide. But Ferndale is in a unique position, and we don't experience nearly as many injuries necessarily as the rest of the nation. We have our own restrictions on fireworks use. And what's more is that if parents can't supervise their children when they're using fireworks, then they won't supervise their children the rest of the year round. Negligent parents are going to be negligent parents the year round. So it's not a question simply of fireworks. It's a question of parents' responsibility. So we should consider not only our own local circumstances, we should also consider what responsibilities the parents operate under, the parents must follow in these circumstances. So I urge that we each look out, each family look out for its own children, and that we simply exercise some common sense, and that we don't simply apply this national concern to our own local situation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some parents should be proud of that. Anyone else? Anyone else like to come forward? Welcome, sir.
My name is Jerry Farley. I don't live in Ferndale. I live in Lake Forest Park, Washington. Any chance that I'd be allowed to speak anyway?
Oh, sure. No. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, in the,
we have no restrictions on where you come from.
In the interest of full disclosure, I've spent the last 30-some years of my life as a professional lobbyist. And in 1982, I stumbled upon this little issue of fireworks and thought it was going to be a simple little business regulation issue. And here it is, 30-some years later, and I'm still, what I think, fighting the battle. Obviously, I have to, I'm sure you know, I represent a fireworks company. But I represent this company as well as other clients, but here tonight, fireworks. Not just in local settings, cities and counties, but also states and several states. There's a bunch of things that I wish I could say. Obviously, I wasn't able to be here last time, but I'd like to just highlight a couple things. First of all, I certainly think I'd open with the statement, don't make Ferndale be like Bellingham. I mean, I live in urban centers, and frankly, I don't see many solutions there to very many issues. People move to smaller cities and smaller towns and more rural areas to get out of the what I think is the mess of most major cities. There's sometimes they're nice places to visit, but they're not necessarily great places to live for all kinds of reasons. Because you find governments thinking that the solution to everything is to say, well, you can't do that, and you can't do that, and you can't do that, and by the way, you can't do that, and pretty soon all of us are starting to look. Well, in 1987, when I went to China for the first time, I came home and I said, we're starting to go where they're going, or they're leaving, and they're leaving to come to where we were. In 1987, everyone in China wore the same clothes, same shirt, same pants, males, females, kids. Today, there's this door called freedom that's opened up, an economic opportunity, and there's 1.3-some billion people who want to get through that. And there's about 33 members of the Central Committee that are standing on top of that hill thinking they're going to stop the horde. Don't be like China. Don't think that you can regulate the individual's natural tendency to want to have something better. I heard a couple things about statistics, and I think it's, as someone said, there's lies, damn lies, and then statistics. It's important that you know what statistics really are. Most of the statistics are either hard statistics, real numbers in real circumstances, collected correctly. And then there's some that are just sort of, they're a little messy. A brother of mine once told me when he worked for a fire department in this state, if there was a fire around the 4th of July, he was told to say it was fireworks related. So you have to be a little bit careful about what some of those statistics might actually mean. And then these national statistics. Let me tell you how that works. There's this little thing called the National Emergency Injury Surveillance System, 120 hospitals. Every single person that comes into these real emergency rooms is worked up. They want to know why it happened and what it was. And then based upon these real numbers, they make estimates. Estimates. They're only estimates. And then you have to understand that since 1990, the quantity of fireworks being imported into, manufactured in the United States and used has gone up by 10 times.
Those lucky Chinese.
Huh?
So those lucky Chinese workers.
Well, actually, it's interesting you say that because the market's starting to shift again under their feet. Because remember, they're largely a labor-intensive product. And Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam and Brazil and Mexico are actually starting to produce products that qualify for the U.S. market.
So we're over our time a little bit here.
Let me say one more thing, if I may.
Sure.
Texas v. Johnson, Supreme Court decision. Mr. Johnson was an avowed anarchist and an avowed communist, and he hated the United States, and he burned the American flag in Texas. Texas had a law against it. They convicted him. And William Kunstler, the same attorney for the Chicago 7, took it to the United States Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said it was First Amendment right of free speech. Do you really want to be in a situation where you can burn the American flag, but you can't light a firework item? And then finally, just
well,
a little practical.
Hyperbole.
Just a little practical idea.
You're testing my patience.
You're testing mine, too.
Here's the problem with the 4th of July only. There are, you know, several years when the 4th of July is on a Wednesday or a Tuesday. So don't restrict it so much that you can't allow somebody to shoot it off on a Friday and Saturday and those other days. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? No? Going once? Going twice? Okay. Good job. Obviously, we're not going to vote tonight, so we'll move to the next council meeting. And
although, can I just say one thing for the freedom lovers?
Sure.
I guess they're going to leave, but that's okay.
You're allowed a statement, yeah.
I have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, too. I also served in the military. And I just don't appreciate people setting off fireworks over my house and having the chunks fall on my roof. And I have that freedom as well. And I appreciate that the 4th of July, I serve my country. And some of the people who stood up there have not served their country. My spouse served their country for 25 years. Every generation of my family has served in the military. That doesn't mean I have to like explosives going off next to my house. And it has nothing to do with freedom for me. For me, it is about terrified cats and junk falling on my roof and the garbage in the streets and the mess they leave behind. So I appreciate that people have freedom, but we all have freedom. I have the freedom to not be under siege in my home for days on end, and I mean it is days on end. So I'm tired of the freedom thing. I'm not tired of the freedom. I'm just tired of people just throwing out that word, freedom. You can't tell me what to do. I have freedom. It's like, well, we all have freedom. We all have rights. What we're trying to do is balance the rights of people who like to blow up stuff and those of us who don't like stuff being blown up next to their houses or over their houses. And it's just a balance. We all have that freedom. And we're trying to balance each other's rights right now. And no one has more rights than anyone else at this point. It really is, we're trying to figure out what the balance is. That's all.
Well
and
said.
I can wear my uniform on July 4th, too, if it makes anybody happy with all my little ribbons.
Well said. Okay, so moving on, mayor reports, I have none. Council reports. Any council reports? Person Burns.
I spent last week in Albuquerque, New Mexico at my annual cake convention. It's in a different city every year, I'm sorry. In 2017, they're going to hold it in Spokane, Washington.
We should all go. City retreat.
They give a little flowers for free.
Convention.
Cake and coffee. Cake and coffee.
Probably a bad deal. I think it's a good idea, though.
Yeah, Van Esquot Street.
What do they do? Okay, just divert for a second. What do you do at a cake convention?
You learn all the new methods of cake decorating.
Did you eat a lot of cake?
No.
No.
I did not.
There's new materials, different things you can use.
All right. Councilperson Mutchler, then Councilperson Hanson.
Yeah, there are three old settlers trustees here. I just wanted to say I was so proud of the auction and the old settlers picnic parade and weekend. It's just very Ferndale. I mean, it's very quintessential Ferndale life. I was just mentioning to the old settlers, I take my children down there and I let them go because I'm usually doing something, watching a cabin, and I feel safe. I feel like they can have fun. It's clean fun, and what a great event for Ferndale. And so I also want to mention coming up, the Chamber's Street Festival is in 2 weeks, I believe. 3 weeks. Just cool stuff that we do here in Ferndale.
And it should be mentioned for those people, maybe those, some are still here, our parade is longer than Bellingham. So it was only by a couple minutes, but that's still longer.
That's the point, right?
Councilperson Hanson.
I'm not going to be involved. Well, let me rephrase that. I'm not the coordinator of the Mel's Hot Dog Camp this year. I've asked to be leave of absence, if you will, for a year. Wendy Lawrence has agreed to take that over, and we'll be looking for you to give her a hand.
Is the scheduling still? I did my schedule with the Chamber of Commerce. Still doing?
Ann will still be doing the scheduling.
Yes, they'll still be doing the scheduling. They have decided not to try and do Friday night.
Okay.
So come.
See the Chamber of Commerce if you have some time to get.
See Kathy. We'll relay the messages forward.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Any other further Councilor Fritz? Councilperson Ingram?
Well, just to tag on to Councilman Mushler's comments about old settlers, we had a relatively new friend come up to the parade from Mount Vernon with his black Tesla, and we were probably the quietest entry in the entire thing. But he brought his wife and their brand new baby and a couple of their friends with them. Had never been to Ferndale before, and absolutely fell in love. They were so thrilled. They spent about 3 hours over in the park, had just a knockdown drag-out ball, and cannot wait to come back. So,
yeah. Great. Yeah. See, small towns are special. Okay, any other council reports? No? Seeing none? Staff? City administrator?
Nothing.
Planning? You don't have anything, do you? Oh, you really do? Okay.
He's just resting at his laurels over here.
Councilmember Watson, just remind me. we have a presentation in front of the regional real estate, commercial real estate brokers Wednesday morning, talking about Ferndale and economic development. And then the next Monday, the city clerk and I are taking a vehicle down to Olympia and presenting Star Park to the RCO for our grant.
Excellent. Good luck.
Good job.
It's a good presentation.
Clerk department?
Sam's vacation's over tomorrow.
Even though he's on vacation, he's still posting on the Facebook. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
You're going down when to Olympia?
Monday. Next Monday.
Next Monday.
The 11th. Yeah.
And ride?
Maybe.
Do you want council members there? I mean, does that have any impact?
It doesn't. So the way that it's set up is...
Okay, you guys can discuss that.
Yeah, we'll discuss
okay.
It. Okay. Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Aye.